It's Freedom Bread.
All right, everyone. This is the Grim Lord, and we're doing Grim Articles. Well, the Grim Articles show, and I've got Dead Penetration here. We don't have Empress. She fell asleep.
Yeah.
And this will be Dead Penetration's last article show. We're going back to the Sunday thing. Also, my schedule's being changed, so I'll have to make content a little later than normal. But I'm basically going from, I used to get off at 11, now I'll be getting off at 1. It's not really that big of a difference. If it was like 3, I'd be pissed, but I can do 1.
I'll be pissed about 1.
I am a little mad, but I'm not as mad because...
When I get hired and they say, this is going to be my schedule, yeah. And they're like, oh yeah, by the way, we're going to move it to 1.
Yeah, everybody's changing. The entire store is changing.
Oh, you going to pay me any better? No. Well, go fuck yourself.
Well, I mean, we'll see. I'm going to play it by ear and see if, you know, if I like it and can do it. And if I can do it, that's cool. But if I can't do it... Then I'll move on to other employment, and of course I'll just change days over for other things. And yeah. I mean, we'll still be able to make content either way. It'll just be different times and all that sort of thing. Really? And there might even come a time where I have to upload from my own connection, which is going to suck, but I might just get the internet. Who knows? We'll see. At any rate, let's go ahead and get started. So, we've got quite a few articles, namely, we can talk about the fact that Akira Toriyama died last night. Well, he didn't die last night, but we found out that Akira Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball Z, and Dragon Ball, and Sandland, and Dr. Slump, and also responsible for all the art in the Dragon Quest series, and Chrono Trigger, and Tobal, and probably a lot of other things, has passed. He died of an acute subdermal hematoma, which means he was struck in the head. And he's 68, so we're thinking that he probably slipped and fell, maybe hit his head on something, and didn't get it checked out, and he bled to death, and that's what killed
him.
He bled internally. There was bleeding in the brain, and that was it.
They overwork him.
So we're just going to share some of the things that have been said in the anime community. And you may have seen these before, so if they have, you know, you can just, skip this part. But let's see here. No, that's not the one. I had set up something.
I think if I got started from the beginning, I would like Dragon Ball more, but it's just one... I don't know it so much. It's like One Piece.
It's not nearly as dark as One Piece.
Well, it's a lot of it.
No. You can actually get finished with Dragon Ball in less than a year. One Piece in
less than a year, eh?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
still a lot for watching one anime.
Yeah, but One Piece, that's a lot different.
One Piece, I'd have to do it kind of like I was watching sitcoms at night and watch one of those and then watch some others.
Yeah. Okay, so following the sudden and tragic death of legendary manga creator Akira Toriyama, the entertainment industry has begun an outpouring of condolences, farewells, and thank you messages to the beloved author. Shonen Jump received numerous messages from many acclaimed manga artists, creators, and more, and they collected some of the most notable creators. We added some more here. Dragon Quest creator Yuji Horii. I am still in a state of disbelief at the very sudden news of Toriyama's passing. I've known Mr. Toriyama since I was a writer for Shonen Jump, and at the recommendation of my editor, Mr. Torishima, I decided to ask him to draw pictures for the game when we launched Dragon Quest. And more than 37 years since then, he has designed the characters, designed so many monsters, and drawn so many fascinating creatures that I can't... characters, rather, that I can't even begin to count them. The history of Dragon Quest has been with Mr. Toriyama's character designs. Mr. Toriyama and the late Mr. Sugiyama were longtime friends of mine who worked on Dragon Quest. I can't believe he's gone. I don't know what to say anymore. I am so sorry. One Piece creator Eiichiro Oda. It is too early. The hole that has been left is too big. Sadness washes over me when I think that I'll never see him again. I have admired you so much since I was a child. I remember the day he called me by name for the first time. On the way home from the day, you used the word friend for us. I also remember the day we had a big party with Mr. Kishimoto. I also remember the last conversation we had. Receiving the baton from the days when reading manga made you a fool. I was one of those who took the baton from the days when reading manga made you a fool and created an era where both adults and children could enjoy reading manga. He showed me his dream that manga could do such things. He showed us the dream that manga could go to the world. It was like watching a hero going forward. Not only manga artists, creators who are active in various industries, the excitement and emotion of the time of Dragon Ball serialization must have taken root in their childhood. That existence is a big tree. For the manga artists of our generation who stood on the same stage, Toriyama's works became more and more important as we got closer to the same stage. It was scary. But I am just happy to see the aloof man himself again. We love him on a blood level. With respect and gratitude for the creative world he left behind, we pray for his soulful rest in peace. I hope that heaven will be a pleasant world, just as you envisioned it. Naruto creator, Masashi Kishimoto. I honestly don't know what to write about this sudden event, but for now I'd like to share my thoughts and feelings that I had hoped that one day Mr. Toriyama would ask me about. I grew up with his manga Dr. Slump in the lower grades of elementary and Dragon Ball in upper grades, and it was natural for me to have his manga as part of my life. Even when I was having a bad day, the weekly Dragon Ball made me forget about it. As a country boy with nothing, that was a relief to me. I really enjoyed Dragon Ball too much. I was a college student. Suddenly Dragon Ball, which had been a part of my life for so many years, came to an end. I felt a tremendous sense of loss and didn't know what to look forward to. But at the same time, it was an opportunity for me to truly understand the greatness of the master who created Dragon Ball. I want to create a work like this. I want to be like him. And as I followed in his footsteps to become a manga artist, a sense of loss disappeared. It was because I enjoyed making manga. By following him, I was able to find new enjoyment. Sensei was always my guide. He was my admirer. I may be inconveniencing him, but I am grateful to him. For me, he was truly the god of salvation and the god of comics. When I first met him, I was too nervous to say a single word, but after meeting him many times at the Tezuka Award judging sessions, I became able to talk with him. I will never forget the slightly embarrassed smile on his face when he and Mr. Oda talked excitedly about how Dragon Ball was fun, as if we were children again competing with each other as Dragon Ball children. I just received the news of Sensei's passing. I feel a tremendous sense of loss more than when Dragon Ball ended. I still don't know how to deal with this hole in my heart. I can't even read Dragon Ball, which I love. I don't even feel like I can write this message to Sensei properly. Everyone in the world was still looking forward to your book. If I could make one Dragon Ball wish come true, I'm sorry, that may be selfish of me, but I am sad, Sensei. Akira Toriyama, Sensei, thank you for 45 years of many enjoyable works, and thank you for your hard work. I am sure that the rest of your family members are still deeply saddened by your loss. Please take care of yourself. I pray for the peaceful rest of Mr. Akira Toriyama. Wingman and Shadow Lady creator, Masakazu Katsura. Even when I think back on it, when I visited your house, when you came to stay at my house, when we went out for fun, all of them were nothing but happy memories. And every time I called you, I laughed so much that I was exhausted. He was a funny man. He was slovenly, cute, tongue-tied, and humble. In my day job, cartooning, we did collaborations and stuff, and that was fun too. But 99% of the time, we never talked about comics. As cartoonists, we were so different in the landscapes we saw and level of artists that I was never conscious of greatness. I understand that, but I didn't feel that in the slightest when I was in contact with him. It's his personality. So rather than a great cartoonist, I still think of him only as a friend. Last summer, before I had my surgery, he seemed to have heard about it somewhere and emailed me. Really, emails are rare, and he was concerned about my health. We have known each other for 40 years, but I don't think I've ever received such a kind email from Mr. Toriyama. I thought it was going to snow. He usually only jokes or talks nonsense. I don't have time to worry about other people. When I called him, I think it was a little before that, I said he's probably going to pass away first. So please hold a farewell party or something, and I'd like you to organize it with Mr. Toriyama in charge. Also, please give a speech so that I can be a foil, I promised him, but he didn't keep his promise. I don't know why I didn't call him after he emailed me, and that's why I regret so much. I am only sorry that we can no longer have long phone calls to talk about trivial things. I have a lot of things I want to talk about. I have all kinds of things to talk about. I would like to talk to you again, even if you have to listen to my ramblings as usual about things that don't interest you. It's no good that the last time you responded to my email asking you to contact me again, you wrote a lighthearted okay. It is deeply painful. Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi. I believe that Mr. Toriyama taught me what professionalism and work are. I respected him from the bottom of my heart. I pray for his soulful rest in peace. Original Japanese Goku voice actor, Masako Nozawa. I don't want to believe it. My head is empty because I don't want to think about it. Even so, whenever I met Toriyama-sensei, I remembered the words he said to me, "Please take care of Goku," and I was able to maintain my feelings. I'll be by Goku's side until the end of my life. Sensei, please watch over us from the sky. I hope you have a peaceful departure. Original Japanese Vegeta voice actor, Ryo Horikawa. It was like a bolt out of the blue, and I still can't believe it. A new development of the work has just begun. From now on, more and more thrilling stories were to be told. It's too sudden. I'm so sorry. Thank you very much for creating such a wonderful work. Please take a good rest. Original Japanese Piccolo voice actor, Toshio Furukawa. When I heard the news of Akira Toriyama's passing brought by my manager, after Mako-san, I am now informing Toshio-san, the first thing that came to my mind was how must Mako, Goku voice actor Masako Nozawa, have been feeling. Goku is even better than Piccolo to me. I last saw him at the preview of Dragon Ball Super Hero just before the release. My deepest condolences to you and your family. Original Dragon Ball opening theme singer, Hironobu Kageyama. I'm the one who sings Cha-La Head Cha-La. It's the biggest medal in my life. The loss of the big sun is too much to bear. But the power of Mr. Toriyama's works will continue to be a strong light and will continue to illuminate people all over the world. Rest in peace. Countless fans shared condolences online and various tidbits and history from Toriyama's career. And of course, here on the Niche Gamer article, there's a couple things here. But basically, he said, Akira Toriyama's influence on all forms of entertainment is virtually impossible to measure. His work and his various creations have influenced countless other creators and billions of fans across the world. Now that that one is done, we have another one here. This is from Peter Payne of J-List. Akira Toriyama passes away. How are Dragon Ball fans taking the news? News broke today that legendary mangaka Akira Toriyama has passed away at the age of 68. This has been a great shock to fans who loved his manga and anime for decades. Let's learn more details about his passing. According to a letter passed in a DB official account, Akira Toriyama passed away on March the 1st due to acute subdermal hematoma, a brain clot. The letter thanked fans for their support of the legendary creator during his lifetime, and gave details that the funeral would be a private affair with family members and close friends only. Just last week, I wrote a blog post trying to rank Japan's most legendary creators. Naturally, Toriyama-sensei was at the top of my list of legendary manga artists who made a deep mark on fans not just Japan, but literally all over the world. In the post, I talked about a Japanese TV show that sends camera crews to different countries and asks foreigners to name the most famous Japanese they can think of. In every case, the Dragon Ball creator was one of the top three names on the list, with millions of avid fans from Brazil to Belgium. His road to fame as a manga artist. Akira Toriyama was born in Nagoya in 1955. As a boy, he was thrilled with the Disney film 101 Dalmatians and started drawing the characters from the film. He won several prizes in elementary school for his art. After high school, he got a job as a designer in an advertising firm, but hated the culture of working at the company and resigned after 2 years. Suddenly without income, Toriyama wondered what he should do with his future. Then he happened to see an advertisement for entries into a manga drawing contest in Weekly Shonen Magazine, and he started to work on a gag manga to submit. He failed to complete the work in time for the contest, but sent it into the magazine anyway. His submission caught the attention of editor Kuzuhiko Torishima, who encouraged the young artist to keep drawing and submitting work. Akira Toriyama worked hard, continuing to rack up rejections, but improving his art with each attempt. Akira Torishima made his debut in Weekly Shonen Jump in 1978 using his real name. This led to fans calling him at home, which embarrassed him and his family. His first major work was Dr. Slump, a gag manga about a scientist who creates a robot android named Arali-chan. That character has become as well known in Japan as Archie and Friends in the West. Naturally, Toriyama is most famous for Dragon Ball because of the huge popularity the manga and anime achieved worldwide. Funimation was founded in 1994 by a Japanese producer with a specific goal of bringing Dragon Ball to the West. Wow, I didn't know that. And that certainly worked out well. Fans react to the passing of Akira Toriyama. We've lost a great man, a visionary, a legend. This man created a series that shaped so much of my life. From childhood to the present, I was always smiling whenever I had the chance to read or watch anything this man created. Rip to the goat. I'm shocked. I don't even know what to say. Thank you for everything, Akira Toriyama, and rest in peace. Thank you, Akira Toriyama. You have touched so many lives and inspired millions throughout the world. May you rest in peace. You will never be forgotten. So sad to read. I'm not ashamed to admit being impacted by this man for my entire life. The whole concept of pride and what that means to me was inspired by Akira Toriyama. You were a legend, sir. Thank you, and rest in peace. Thank you for reading this post about the sad passing of manga artist Akira Toriyama. There is some discussion, but there's only one. He will leave a void in my otaku heart to the day I join the universe. So, all right. So, let me talk about my impact. How this has impacted me, I guess you could say. Sorry, I didn't get as much sleep as I would have liked. Okay, so Dragon Ball was a big part of my life. When I was about 8 years old, maybe 10, it was first syndicated. And it was on Sundays, weirdly enough. So it was hard to catch. But I was able to watch it, and I was cooked. I'd never seen anything like Dragon Ball before. It was so masculine as far as the fighting and the, you know, the working out and the exercising. And, you know, a lot of bodybuilders have credited Dragon Ball to their interest in building muscle. And, I mean, because that was one of the big parts of it. You know, these guys constantly exercising, working out. And I mean, it was an anime that really influenced people to exercise. That's a very big thing about it. It was a thing that made guys want to lift weights because they wanted to look like Goku or Vegeta or some of these characters, you know. So, you know, I loved it. I watched Dragon Ball every single season. I've watched all the seasons. I own GT. I have the physical box of GT. I've watched all of Super in little Malaysian. I like the Malaysian boxes, which are kind of cool looking. But yeah, I've watched all the subversion of those. I've watched all the movies. Man, I remember being 16 years old and learning about... Well, this was when Winamax... Like, yes, it's a piracy moment, but this is so old. Like... You couldn't get this stuff. It was hard to find. There wasn't streaming sites for this. You couldn't just go on a anime site and watch it. So you had to download this shit off of 56K. And only things I could find were like bits and pieces. Like I was watching a little bit of movie 12. Because I'd never seen movie 12. And of course the life and death, the Janemba movie. If people remember the Janemba movie where they brought Hitler back or whatever. They brought all the dead were coming back. So, I mean, it was crazy how far they went. But I remember that one, and I actually had a friend of mine who his father was in, you know, the military. And he brought him a freaking Japanese subversion of the Janemba movie. So we got to watch a subversion on VHS before anybody else in America had ever even gotten their hands on it. It was crazy. Not only that, but like the Lord Slug movie came out and I bought that and it had, you know, the soundtrack was different. They used music from Disturbed and Deftones and Drowning Pool. And all these bands are still really big on my radar because I remember that fucking movie. Even though Lord Slug was not a very good movie. Wasn't great. And the Cooler film. Don't forget about the Cooler film. It had Drowning Pool in it as well. And remember, this is when their frontman, or the original frontman, was still alive. So this is Drowning Pool at their fucking best. And they're playing some good shit. Remember, this is uncut, so they're playing the uncut music, too. So yeah, just absolute classics. Now, there are fans that don't like the new metal stuff. I mean, especially now, because it didn't age well, I guess, for some. And they prefer the Japanese soundtrack, so they have restored those. But for me, it's always going to be that, because I was a new metal guy, basically, in the back in the day. That was my bands I was listening to. And they were putting them in Dragon Ball. I was like, oh, cool, it's got Disturbed and Drowning Pool and all these bands I jam anyway, and they're in an anime that I love, right? So it was a great time for me. Also, we have to talk about Chrono Trigger. Dude, I played Chrono Trigger so many times. So many fucking times. I thought it was the GOAT when I still think it is. I still think it's one of the best RPGs ever made in the history of mankind. And it, nothing touches Chrono Trigger for me. Chrono Cross is great too, but Chrono Trigger just really showed Akira Toriyama's skills as a 2D artist. You know, even the concept art, you know, and it's kind of crazy because just before he died, somebody shared a bunch of Chrono Trigger art that he had done. And I managed to get all of it and just look at all the, you know, the designs of it. And then, of course, you know, Dragon Quest VIII, that's another one that I remember. I had the Dragon Quest VIII on the PlayStation 2, and of course the game is entirely cel-shaded. So it's like watching a Akira Toriyama thing come to life, and you're playing with these characters in this world, and it's all animated by Toriyama, and it's such a great fucking game. Of course, this game has been, I think they put like a version on the DS or the Vita, whatever, the 3DS, something like that. Maybe there's even a Switch version. I don't know. Maybe there's a port. But anyway, it's such a great fucking game.
I'd love to play it. I've never gotten a chance.
The Dragon? But you don't really like RPGs, so.
What, is this the one that where it's the cartoon that you do the motions? It's old. It looks like
No. They have Quest
or something.
Yeah, you're thinking of something else. But they no. The Dragon Quest series, or Dragon Warrior, if you will, has been going on for many years. By the way, it's probably a good time for me to jump back into, because you know I got my little emulator box. I should probably start playing. I think Dragon Quest 3 or 4, 5, and 6 got remade. Completely remade. So I'm thinking about maybe playing those. Sadly, 1 and 2 haven't been remade. And of course, there's Dragon Quest 7 on the PlayStation. Mm-hmm. And I think even Dragon Quest 9 is on the DS. So there's a lot of DS stuff that I can play with him. And of course, there's, as far as his work is concerned, you know, there's also the Dragon Quest XI, which everybody's really freaking out about. They love that game. I was saying, oh, Dragon Quest XII, we're like, what do you mean Dragon Quest XII? Nobody's played Dragon Quest XII. It doesn't exist yet, but people really love that fucking game. So yeah, it's sad that, you know, he's passed, but he's left a legacy. He's left a legacy that, like, I'll always remember. Because, I mean, whether it was the Funimation Dragon Ball, yeah, or the, the Ocean Dub Dragon Ball, or the subbed Dragon Ball, I remember all of it. I'm cool with everything in that series. It's a great part of my life. And I mean, again, even with Chrono Trigger, there was the original remake, but there was the original game, then there was the PlayStation remake, and I loved that because you had the anime scenes, which were animated by Toriyama. He did anime scenes for it, and they were small, but they were nice. And then of course you had the DS remake, which a lot of people say is the definitive, but they've destroyed some lore. I haven't played that version, but I'm somewhat curious enough. Anyway, yeah, it's a lot of stuff that he's brought us. Also, there was Tobal number one. I played Tobal number one and two. They are not, they have not aged well. I will say that. They have unfortunately not aged well. That's just PlayStation 1 games. A lot of PS1 games have not aged well at all. I was looking at that a couple of days ago, you know, playing on the PS1, like, oh my god, they're so blocky. Like,
well, at the time, it was...
I know. It was novel. It was something new that people had never seen before. But now, yeah. It's...
I think about the old ones that I used to have that just not up to par.
Oh, no, they're not up to par. But there was some
Falcon Filter.
Yeah, but there's still some interesting ones on there, because I was looking at some of the PS1s. I'm like, but this one I might try, and this one I might give a shot. You know, there's a couple of them. Parasite Eve 2, I think I'm going to go ahead and give that one a go. Maybe the first one. There's a few of them I was looking at. So, I mean, it is what it is. And, I mean, there's so many Dragon Ball games. There's just, oh my god, there's so many Dragon Ball games. There's more Dragon Ball games than you can ever imagine. Of course, you know, my favorite. I remember Dragon Ball Hyper Dimension. Dragon Ball Z Hyper Dimension. That fucking game. I love the artwork. That was such a fucking cool game. Because they did have Super Battutin 1 and Super Battutin 2 and 3. And those were okay. But when you got the DBZ Hyper Dimension, oh my god. The characters and sprites looked amazing for that game. They still stand out. I guarantee. Go play Dragon Ball Z Hyper Dimension on the Super Nintendo. And you'll be like, oh my god, those sprites look fucking cool. And I'm talking about for a fan of, like, 2D games. I'm talking about they're on the par of 2D games that we make today. The sprites look that good, even that many years ago, because they were just really putting it all when they made that game. And, of course, you had the Budokai Tenkaichi games. Those are great. I remember Dragon Ball Z Budokai 1 and 2, the originals. Those are fun. I remember when they first came out and they were new. And then, of course, you had Tenkaichi, and Tenkaichi 2 was my favorite, even though Tenkaichi 3 I did have. And then, of course, there was this one for PS2 that was just bizarre. I can't even really remember how it went. And then you had your Life of Goku, which was the little top-down one. I think I can actually play that on my DS thing now, the little Life of Goku. Or maybe, no, that was GBA, I think it was. No, that was GBA. So, yeah, I could play that on the GBA. But, yeah, there's just so much that he did as far as that. And, of course, you have your new Dragon Ball games on the PS4, PS5, all that. You know, people like those. And the Dragon Ball Z Kakarot and... all that kind of stuff. It's really, really cool stuff. So, the legacy will live on. And of course, Sandland is coming out, which is the very first game he's ever had developed on Sandland. Sandland's been around as a manga for a long time, and he was trying to drop Dragon Ball to work on Sandland, because he really kind of wanted to end Dragon Ball, but they don't want to end Dragon Ball, because it's a fucking cultural thing, you know?
Phenomenon.
Yeah. It's big. Like, Goku is recognized in the same realm as Batman and Dracula and Superman. He's pretty much like the Japanese Superman. That's what a lot of people would say. He's kind of like that. Everybody's trying to fight Goku against Superman because that's literally the Japanese equivalent. So... I mean, it's an interest. It's very interesting, and he's had a heck of a legacy. And if you haven't checked these games out, definitely check them out. And I'm sure there's more that I just haven't even thought about. You'll be like, "Oh, would you remember this one? You remember that one?" No, I hadn't played everything he's done, but I've played a lot that he has done. So it's pretty hardcore. It's sad. It's sad, but, you know, life goes on. Okay, so now we're going to go into the articles.
Ooh, this might be the only thing we need tonight.
Well, we're going to go till 1:30. 12:30 to 1:30.
I said, I thought those were the article. That was a long
other, one. Yeah, well, that was, we were doing an entire, like, I'm literally going to have a remembering Akira Toriyama as part of this one. Groom reveals his new wife cheated on him with the best man in the most brutal fashion during a wedding speech. A groom gets revenge on his cheating bride and untrustworthy best man when he dramatically revealed that they had slept together during his wedding speech. On the Unfiltered Bride podcast, wedding planners Georgina and Beth, both based in Gloucestershire, spoke about a shocking story involving a groom who was cheated on. He announced the betrayal to all the guests by handing out photos of the bride having sex with the best man before storming out with his entire family in tow.
I wouldn't have spent all that money.
Georgina said his family had known all along, but he wanted to go through with the wedding so the bride would have to pay for all the food.
Oh.
They posted a snippet of their podcast on TikTok, which quickly racked up more than 500,000 views. On the podcast, Georgina said, I've got another story to tell you. I can't tell you who told me because I'm not really allowed to tell the story, but fuck it, I'm going to tell the story anyway. So there was a wedding, and they did the wedding. Bride and groom got married, lovely ceremony, drinks, reception, sat down for wedding breakfast, had their food, speeches after food. Father of the bride does his thing, groom stands up and said, just before I properly get started, there's some envelopes coming round now. If you could all open them up. Yeah, those are pictures of the bride fucking the best man, so I'll be leaving now. She continued, dropped the microphone, and him and all his family knew about it and left because they wanted the bride to have to pay for the food. Beth then asked, so the bride paid for everything? And Georgina responded and said, the bride's family paid for everything.
Yep.
Beth then said, karma's a bitch. Georgina added, the best man as well.
Yeah. Probably lost a friend.
Well, I mean,
I don't know, someone fucked my wife up.
Yeah, it'd be over with.
The P.S.
Okay, so we gotta talk about this because it's going around the internet. Hattiesburg police arrest woman for unnatural intercourse with dog. A woman was arrested in Hattiesburg for unnatural intercourse with a dog. Pine Belt News reported that Denise Frazier, 20, was arrested on February the 29th and charged with one count of attempted unnatural intercourse and one count of unnatural intercourse. Frazier was booked into the Forest County Jail. Police also arrested Skylar English, 18, with accessory after the fact. Frazier appeared on court on March 1st and was given a $20,000 bond. English received a $10,000 bond. Frazier was previously arrested in Jones County in April 2023 for unnatural intercourse and aggravated cruelty towards an animal. So they were both fucking dogs. So there's a Facebook profile for this woman, and a lot of people have been thinking it's really her. What happens is, it was her at one time, but somebody hacked it. So they've basically made an OnlyFans account for her, and they've made thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars from stuff that was, I guess, I don't know where they found it. There's no telling where you find that stuff. They have all the tools,
these
hackers.
That's what they say, it's never gone off the internet.
Yeah. So they've made thousands and thousands of dollars. Just in weeks by having this material up there. Okay. Texas mom is charged with sending son to school with booby-trapped lemon, salt, and vinegar drink to get revenge on kids who kept stealing it. Once child thief who drank the concoction left hospitalized. A Texas mom has been jailed after sending her son to school with a special lemon, salt, and vinegar drink that landed another student in the hospital.
Because they kept stealing it. What?
Jennifer Lynn Rossi, 45, put the feral concoction inside a sports bottle and gave it to her son to bring to school to get back at his bully who stole it from him.
Well, there you go. Mm-hmm. I don't think anything's wrong with that. If the kid's going to steal his stuff, he has what's coming to him.
The son attends Legacy Traditional School, Alamo Ranch, 20 miles northwest of downtown San Antonio. During PE class on Tuesday, Rossi's son gave the bottle to his classmate who had allegedly stolen his drink the day before. He was taken to hospital after drinking the mixture when he began to experience nausea and a headache.
There you go.
Upon arriving to the school, deputies learned that the sick child was given a drink by a classmate during PE class. Although the contents of the drink were non-toxic, the incident resulted in a child being hospitalized. Hospital staff informed the investigator that the child victim required additional medical monitoring and would eventually be discharged from the hospital. An investigation revealed that Rossi intentionally mixed the drink together to prevent her son's drink from being stolen at school by other students, according to officials.
I bet he doesn't try to steal that kid's drink anymore.
Although the contents of the drink were non-toxic, the incident resulted in the child being hospitalized, the police statement went to say. Yep. Rossi was arrested and booked into jail, where she was charged with injury to a child causing bodily injury.
Did it? Really?
I don't think so.
It just made him nauseous.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm telling you, not enough justice in the world.
No, it's...
I think that was fair.
Yeah.
He didn't die.
Didn't die.
And won't steal the kid's drink anymore.
Yep. Let's see. I'm trying to look at these comments.
Yeah.
Bullies ask for it, then cry when they get it.
Yep.
Free Jennifer. I used to bring a carton of heavy cream. Hold on. It does that. It does that sometimes. Boy, these damn... I said I was going to start using Brave. Hold on, not there. Just give me a minute, folks. Alright, here we go. This should do it. I say that, of course. Alright, so here we go. I used to bring a carton of heavy cream to work for my coffee. I put a sticker on the carton with my name and a private do not use message. People still used it, so I added a cup of salt and shook it up. The next day, the level of cream went down an inch, then never went down again. Here we have yet another bully being made out as a victim because he got fooled.
Yep.
Yep. Basically, the school says the kid is entitled to bully her son and eat his food as well. Yep. This woman should have never been arrested. I'd sue the fuck out of the district and the city.
I would.
I live in SA. She should tell them she wants a jury trial. That'd be the only time I would want jury duty. Not guilty. Not guilty. Not guilty.
To take the drink.
Mm-hmm. Or,
yeah, nobody. It's his own thing, and he won't do it again.
On the plus side, the kid will think twice about stealing a drink again. Object lesson. She's a hero. Only send your kids to public schools if you want them ignorant and to be bullied. Yes.
Yeah.
That seems to be the way things are rolling. Sounds like the recipe for the traditional British New England summer beverage switchel or haymaker's punch. Criminal charges will be dismissed as the blend was non-toxic, per the police, and there is no criminal offense of giving someone a drink they don't like, nor criminal or civil liability for a bully getting a tummy ache because the little piggy swilled it all down. Hospital, give me a break. Looking for a lottery winning. The bully won yet again. It's just sour lemonade. Why did he drink it if it upset his stomach? Water, vinegar, and lemon. Hospital? Hope he had a wee tummy ache for a few hours. We caused nothing more. I'm with the mum on this one. Yeah. Add a bit of ground ginger and you've got switchel. An old-fashioned summer drink.
Oh.
Old girlfriend was having her lunches stolen at work. Double chocolate brownie mixed with X-Lax solved that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Good for her. All bullies should get that kind of treatment. They do such harm and cause such misery, they deserve the tables being turned.
Well, yeah.
I can't find any sympathy for the thieving bully. I honestly feel like I would have done the same thing. She's too honest. People use apple cider all the time in drinks these days, so she added the vinegar, salt, and lemon, forgot the honey. Of course the drink was meant for a precious boy. See how that works? It's not technically a lie if the drink was consumed by someone else unintentionally. If the school wouldn't do anything about the bullying, I understand why she would decide to do this, but you have to be very careful, because you never know what could... But you never know... what people are allergic to, and it can be dangerous. Also, I hope her son waited till the bully snatched a drink.
The bully is the one. If he dies because he's allergic to something, that's his own fucking fault.
Shouldn't have stolen. My dad years ago put a small mousetrap inside his sandwich box because someone kept nicking his sandwiches when he used to take a packed lunch.
I put a beaver trap in it.
Hi, many people here have great struggles. This is from Cuba. With not only the reading, but the compensation of skills too. Nobody saw anything. Nobody stole anything. And this female's son gave the drink to another student. And if somebody were to ask me, he needs to be locked up.
Whoever worded it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure he gave it after he was threatened or bullied. If the kid was bullied, they just don't. They're just trying to.
He can't understand English, so he.
Oh, well, he's retarded.
Well, he's from Cuba.
I wouldn't listen to a Chinese parable and then say, right. Well, they don't know what they're talking about. Because I don't, you know, their culture's different than ours.
That's right. Clear his glass. They gave the drink to the other.
Now, if she'd put rat poison in it.
This will teach him to stop stealing people's stuff. We've all done it. Oh my God, release her. These kids won't be stealing anyone else's drinks. They only went to the hospital because they didn't feel good and they didn't know what to drink. They didn't know what they drank. Give me a break. Wait, this is not legal in Texas? Who would have guessed? The kid is lucky that's all he's got. In the 80s, it would have been a boot to the mouth.
Yep.
You can't even hit kids anymore. They want to sue everybody now.
Why not?
Yeah, they done changed it. It's bad.
I don't think you should hit, but spanking. Well, see,
no. I'm talking about they won't let kids hit. Like, if there's a bully, you can't fight them back because the parents can sue.
What kind of justice is that?
That's not.
That's where you get school shooters and everything
that's
else.
That's why you have that.
And I ain't saying school shooters should be school shooters.
I know,
but
yeah, you're pushing people.
That's the same thing Biden does. He pushes radicalism by saying certain groups of people are oppressed and then is surprised when they go out and get guns and have a hit list.
We've got another one here. New York Post. This is what I wanted Empress for. Bartender tips cops after finding child porn on phone. Florida woman left at pub. You know what? We're going to save that one for Empress. She's from Florida.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Well, she's living in Florida. She's not from Florida. She's from Puerto Rico.
Is she?
But, let's see here. Ah, here we go. New York City women's insanely high dating standards are screwing them over. Expert. 6 feet tall, a six-pack, and a six-figure salary. That's seemingly the bare minimum men must possess to impress ambitious single women in New York City.
Where many are outnumber men like 3 to 1.
I know. Many are also hoping their date is endowed with a trust fund, an Ivy League degree, and a summer house in the Hamptons. A recent survey from dating app Flirtini found that a whopping 80% of women are open to lowering their standards, though, in order to meet a mate. But are New York City's ladies willing to do the same? It's no secret that dating has always been a blood spot in the Big Apple, where the world's most eligible and ambitious jockey to bolster both their prospects and social standing, but the list of non-negotiables is seemingly more outlandish than ever. I 100% would not date a guy who lives in Queens, and I do a heavy stalk before saying yes to anyone who lives in Brooklyn or Jersey.
Oh, because Trump came from Queens?
I don't know.
You know, that's where he's originated from.
All three of my last boyfriends have Wikipedia pages, another selective singleton weighed in. Money's nice, one New York dater 24 declared.
Shit.
A private jet sweetens the deal.
Why are you in New York then? They're the most overpriced people in the world.
It makes sense why New York single ladies have sky-high standards. Why waste time with a male who doesn't measure up? But would it be wise for Big Apple beauties to lower their standards for lasting love? Are the super successful, super fussy daters hurting themselves waiting for a perfect partner who may not even exist? Dating expert Amber Saletti says yes and no. I have met tons of singles through my dating events, both men and women, who have crazy expectations for their partner, and I feel sad for a lot of them who are clearly feeling lonely and are going to remain single forever, Saletti told the Post. The dating expert says she understands dating deal breakers and used to be one of the worst offenders when she lived in Manhattan. She now resides in Austin, Texas, where she's happily married. When someone presents me with a list of 20-plus things they have to have, I ask them to try cutting it down to 5 to 10 things, and then all of a sudden they have so many more options, she says. Dating apps have also fueled the fastidiousness with which women can select their prospective suitors. Infamous 09 research found that women rate a massive 80% of men as unattractive or below average, and Bumble and Hinge have only accelerated the ick. The next generation of Carrie Bradshaws aren't swiping on a schlub with an unfiltered fishing photos on his profile.
Well,
they're in hot pursuit of their own Mr. Big. Dating was always a minefield, but now I think it's even crazier because you can always scroll and find someone cooler or hotter or richer, one 46-year-old single told The Post. Still, there are some surprising things that relationship guru Saletti believes women shouldn't budge on. If you're only attracted to men of a certain height or physique, you may be superficial. But it's okay to keep your high standards, she asserts. Meanwhile, the guru says that dating someone with the same political beliefs and views on child rearing should be a non-negotiable.
Yeah.
If you try to compromise on those types of deal breakers, you're going to end up in a relationship with a lot of arguing, resentment, and eventual demise, she explained. Yeah. But Saletti asserts that New York City singles should think twice before writing off a man based on his income. There are a lot of very financially successful men that work in other less glamorous jobs and industries that they, single women, wouldn't consider because they don't work in finance, real estate, law, or entertainment, or whatever sexy profession they have built their fantasy around, she explained. Other women, she says, refuse to date men who are younger than them. Her advice, lower that standard by lowering your cutoff, your age cutoff. A lot of women won't even take the time to get to know a guy that doesn't fall within their age range. You could very well be bringing everything to the table they're looking for, not to mention they have less baggage, the relationship expert declared.
Mm-hmm.
So for those fussy ladies still looking for love in New York City, Saletti says you should simply reevaluate rather than disregard your high standards. Don't throw out all your criteria, she declared. Just be willing to compromise on some.
You do need to compromise. What's important in a relationship instead of what... Because I tell you, nobody's going to be what... Because everyone has a picture of who they want, but nobody thinks about what they need.
So...
I think you should be attracted to your mate, but...
Right.
A lot of people are... A lot of women nowadays are more focused on what others think of their mate instead of what they think of their mate.
Right. So, Rupert Murdoch has engaged a 67-year-old girlfriend. At 92, he won't be... I don't think he'll be with her for that much longer.
No.
Let's see here. Got a lot of articles on... Oh, here we go. I distract UFC fighters with my boobs before bouts and I'll never stop. A Playboy model accused of distracting UFC stars with her huge cleavage has shared her side of the story. Francia James, 33, is known for delighting fans with her racy displays online. But the busty model also has a passion for the UFC and is regularly seen attending events to get up close and personal with some of the stars. The model who posts online as Francity has previously gotten in the face of Santiago Ponzinibbio, Sean O'Malley, and Floyd Mayweather, using her not-so-secret yet highly seductive weapons to distract them. In previous clips, her methods were far more subtle than her most recent head-to-head with Mirab Dvalishvili. On February the 18th. The clip shows the pair squaring up to each other, attempting to remain very serious. However, the 33-year-old fighter from Georgia couldn't resist looking down at her chest, which was proudly on display in a plunging crop top. He then pretended to back up scared, making Francia burst out laughing. It's gained more than 121,000 likes since being posted by the fighter with the caption, "They won." Not even that, I guess.
Let me see.
Yeah.
I want to see him.
Oh, Lord. You can barely see anything when I've got so many X's. No, all this crap.
My X's live in Texas.
No, I've got so many ads popping up. God, this is incredible. How do people do this?
My X's live in Texas. Because Texas is the place I really want to be. So, George Strait.
Right here.
Oh, yeah. You titty fuck those.
Oh, yeah, I guess you could.
Shoot, you could do a lot of things with those. Picky's what you are. But they're not quadruple D.
No, we're good. All right. So, we're not going to talk about the sweet baby shit. I'm going to do an entire show on that probably tomorrow. That, and I'll also talk about the crow. So we'll talk about this. Man tells wife he's entitled to half of her wages, and everyone is on his side. A man was baffled when his wife decided to go back to work after being a stay-at-home mom and assured that all her money could just go towards pampering herself. Well, she found out wrong. Imagine a situation where your partner told you that half of your work earnings were to be given to them. You'd likely laugh in their face and tell them to dream on. After all, you're working and you've earned it, so you deserve to keep money for yourself, right? Well, when one man told his wife he was entitled to half of the income from her new job rather than outrage, people agreed. The pair had been married for 12 years and have two children together. And while he goes out to work, she's a stay-at-home mom and brings up their kids. He said it was not a setup I enforced in any respect, and he had always told his partner that he would be supportive of her if she wanted to work. His earnings go into a joint bank account for them both to use as they wish, and he said he is comfortably earning enough to support the family while she cares for the children. When their youngest child was about to start school, the mom had spoken about going back to work, a situation they previously agreed would result in all domestic jobs being split evenly again. The mother had explained she was excited for a bit of normality, including being able to afford beauty treatments and clothes, and she'd even spoken about building her own at-home library.
No, I already say no on that, because
right,
if you're trying to do all that, it sounds like you're starting to try to fish for somebody else.
Right.
But, and you know, so many people need to get that shit out of their head if they're wanting to be married, because
right,
it is a partnership. It is not singular at someone supposed to cater to you and then you get to reap the rewards.
Right.
It's, you know, like my parents, you know, when they both worked, the money was used to pay bills first.
Right.
And then what they had left over, you know, my dad got money and my mom got money, you know, to do personal things. I think my dad, he still gets an allowance, and my mom still gets an allowance. They just split it depending on after they've paid their bills.
Right.
But it's not like, oh, my mom gets to have all the money and then my dad SOL.
Okay. Well, let's see. When the youngest child was about to go... No. We didn't do that. He said it was not a setup I enforced in any respect, and he'd always told his partner that he would be supportive of her if she wanted to work. His earnings go into a joint bank account for them both to use as they wish, and he said he's comfortable earning enough to support the family while she cares for the children. When their youngest child was about to start school, the mom had spoken about going back to... Oh, no, we talked about it. We did this already. She said beauty treatments, clothes, and building her own at-home library. Okay, we talked about that. He said, I chimed in. Wow, you've got some big plans. I wonder what I'm going to do with my half. Her face. First it went white with surprise and shock, and then the brows furrowed and her face went red. What do you mean, your half? That's where I argued that everything I ever made during our marriage was equally shared, and why should her money be any different?
Yep.
She said that my paycheck was the family's money, and that her paycheck was extra money that she was earning for herself.
I said, I would divorce you if it wasn't more expensive.
I then told her that, sure, she can work and make extra money that she can use in any way she sees fit, but then I no longer felt it fair if I took equal work of a household upkeep. She went livid, called me an asshole and a patriarchal misogynist.
Well, I guess you can go get the divorce papers then.
After posting on Reddit in 2020 to ask if he was in the wrong, he was unanimously defended by those in the comments, with one writing, she literally took the old joke, what's mine is mine and what's yours is ours.
Yeah. And that's what women don't get, like, the incentive of getting married nowadays mm-hmm. is fucking ridiculous. If a lady says, I just don't like this, I'm tired of it, she still tries to get half of your assets. And alimony and everything else. She doesn't say, oh, I'm going to build something. But on the other hand, a guy has to, you know, lessen his quality of life so she can live out her dreams.
Right. Another tried to see both sides of the argument, commenting, you know... Oh, hold on. A second said, you've had a single pot of money for your whole married life. That doesn't change because now two people are contributing to it. Another tried to see both sides of the argument, commenting, you know, I kind of understand where she's coming from, though I don't agree with it. Even though you never viewed it as your money, and it was always used as the family's money, she probably has always felt like it low-key really is your money.
The thing about that is if it were a single person, that's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you're married changes the whole dynamic of the situation. Because that's not why two people work in a household. They work, both work, because you can't afford just one, usually.
Right.
And you still gotta pay bills. If you want to be comfortable, it's almost what you gotta do.
New York Post. Couple making $70,000 a month still stressed about money. We're not broke, but it feels like we are. A well-to-do couple with a net worth of $1.3 million said they feel broke, even though they earn an income of up to $70,000 a month. Sandra, 46, and Brad, 48, who have been married for 25 years, said their disagreements over money have put a strain on their relationship to the point where he's contemplated divorce. The couple told I Will Teach You to Be Rich podcaster Ramit Sethi that they have four children and live an elevated lifestyle, which includes private schooling for their kids, ballet lessons, and sports camps. The news was first reported by CNBC. They even splurged for a bathroom set that set them back $25,000. Despite Brad's $70,000 a month earnings in the mortgage industry, Sandra told Sethi, on paper we're not broke, but it feels like we are. While Brad's income fell from his annual wage of $800,000, the couple spending kept a pace, they said. A source of Sandra's anxiety is Brad's decision to invest their life savings, $1 million, into risky fracking operations that has so far been paying out $20,000 a month. The risky bet by Brad, who called himself an entrepreneur in his guts, has Sandra frustrated. I can't wrap my head around why she doesn't get a job, she said. Sandra said while she wants a steady income, all her husband wants the moon and the stars and all the things in between. While Brad has been the primary breadwinner, Sandra is responsible for tracking the couple's finances. She said she keeps a spreadsheet tracking inflows and outflows of cash across 82 different categories of spending, including ballet and basketball camp for the kids, a trip to Cancun, dog food, and annual membership at Costco. We didn't worry about budgeting things when times were good, according to Sandra, but because her husband is on a high variable income, there are lean months, which makes her doubt whether she can fit in everything they need within the budget. I sometimes ambush him at inappropriate moments and tell him about how bad our money looks like before we go to bed, Sandra said.
Even she's admitting to inappropriate behavior.
Brad told Sethi that Sandra gets upset no matter how much money is in the bank. I get very frustrated with that same conversation over and over again, whether we've got a lot of money in the bank or whether we've got very little money in the bank, Brad said. I feel like we're playing a very opposite game. If making $70,000 a month, $840,000 a year, how do you only have a net worth of $1.3 million? $70,000 a month earnings in the mortgage industry. It seems like we are living in some kind of major bubble. Fortunes made from really producing nothing. Massive trade and budget deficits. It is a golden time.
Is it?
Generally, married couples with professional jobs make that much in about 4 years, but it's continuous and only increases over time if they make good career choices. If this couple only has $1.3 million and their grifts go south, they might want to return that $25,000 bedroom set.
Yeah, they'd have to be really successful. I remember being in college and them saying college-educated people may make $2.7 million in their lifetime.
Yeah. It says...
But inflation, you know.
Yeah. Okay, it says Elon Musk has deleted a post blasting Jeff Bezos' ex-wife, Mackenzie Scott's charitable giving. Elon Musk blasted Jeff Bezos' ex-wife, Mackenzie Scott, for a charitable donation in an ex-post that he deleted a short time after it went online Wednesday evening. Super rich ex-wives who hate their former spouse should be filed a... Should... Wow, hold on. Ooh. Let's see here. Let's try that one again. Super rich ex-wives who hate their former spouse should filed be listed among reasons that Western civilization died, the Tesla boss wrote on his social media platform, formerly known as Twitter, which Musk... Well, we know that. Musk wrote in the post in a response to an ex-user who complained that Scott, who divorced the Amazon founder in 2019 after 25 years of marriage, was giving away money to organizations that deal with issues of race and or gender. Her fund ought to be called the Awful Fund. It's the ultimate aspirational expression of the most awful group in the U.S., the ex-user who goes by the name I.O. wrote. And Musk deleted the post hours later. The post, not the post, Musk post, but the post, the New York Post, has sought comment from ex-owner Scott and Bezos. The root of Musk's animus towards Scott appears to be her charitable giving to the political action Towards Scott appears to be her charitable giving to political action committees aligned with the Democratic Party. Yeah. On May 2022, Musk wrote on social media that Scott was giving money to PACs posing as charities.
Yeah.
It's safe to say that Mackenzie Scott is not exactly a big fan of her ex-husband. Unfortunately, a lot of others are getting caught in the crossfire, Musk wrote.
Yeah.
According to our website, Scott has donated hundreds of millions of dollars to organizations devoted to causes such as racial equality, LGBT, gender equality, public communism. Communism, communist causes. Well,
all those sections fall in the same category.
Public health, climate change, communism, functional democracy, communism.
Yeah.
The recipients of her largesse include the Obama Foundation, Movement for Black Lives, Jackie Robinson Foundation, Morehouse College, Howard University, Planned Parenthood, and the George W. Bush Presidential Center.
Yeah, they, when you think about LGBT, just for instance, like all these organizations mm-hmm. are based off of we don't get enough rights, so we should have more rights than other people.
Yep.
And they claim hate crimes, but I'll tell you, I've met some people in that category. There's been nice people, and a lot of times there's people that try to shove themselves in your face so much
mm-hmm.
as an aggressor, you can't help but want to beat their ass.
Right.
And it's not a matter of what they are. It's a matter of them trying to cause something so they can say, I'm the victim. I need more rights.
Scott's net worth was pegged by Bloomberg Billionaires Index at $36 billion as of Wednesday. The 53-year-old writer's wealth is derived from her 1.9 ownership stake in her ex-husband's e-commerce company. According to SEC filing, Scott received a 4% stake in Amazon as part of her divorce from Bezos. At the time, the stake was worth $36 billion, making her one of the richest women in the world. In late January, Bloomberg News reported that Scott sold 65.3 million shares of Amazon, or around 25% of her stake in that company. At the time she sold her shares, they were worth $10.4 billion. Scott, who pledged in 2019 to donate half her fortune to charity, has given millions of dollars to various causes. Since divorcing Bezos, Scott has donated more than $16.5 billion to several charities. In the last year alone, she has published a list of more than 360 organizations that have received a total of $2.15 billion. Good Lord. Crazy. Absolutely freaking crazy. What do you think, Post? Let's see what they say. She's not showing off her billions, showcasing palatial homes and private jets. She's helping the disenfranchised and the downtrodden. I don't know about that.
Well, anything with the Democratic Party now is trying to take away Republican.
Well, they said
freedoms.
She did donate to Meals on Wheels and the Girl Scout Council. I mean, there's some good charities she probably
is
did.
It,
Meals on Wheels?
When's the last time I saw a Girl Scout camping? Never. Their whole thing is sell cookies that I didn't bake. Get over yourself, bitch.
Okay, I guess on that note, we will end the show. Thanks, everybody, for being a part of this. Sorry, I'm a little tired, as you can see, but we'll continue next Friday, and things will be a little bit different. We'll see what I can manage. It'll be a new schedule. If I am working from till 1 o'clock, it'll be a little different for me. We'll see how I handle it. We'll see. At any rate, this is the Grim Lord and Dead Penetration, and remember, he will see you on
Sunday.
Not this Sunday, but next Sunday. Next Sunday with some stuff that you haven't seen in a while. We're thinking about bringing some old stuff back. And when I say old, I mean stuff we haven't done in a while. We're not going to talk about, I mean, maybe we've said a few things, hinted here and there. But I know you guys will be really, really interested, because I know I am. So at any rate, this is the Grim Lord Dead Penetration, and we'll see you guys... Well, I'll see you guys next time, hopefully with Empress, on the Grim Articles Show. Enjoy the decline.
Later.